This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, yes, indeed. 8 minutes after 8 o'clock, John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to Studio 4.
Well, thank you very much. You know, the last time I was here, Stu did this. Only Stu Loser, my ace press secretary, could do this. He actually looked up at what we talked about back in August.
I'm glad somebody remembers.
Well, Stu does, and, you know, I do, and you do. I'm sure everybody else does. We were talking about staying out of the ocean because a Tropical Storm Danny was arriving. Now, yesterday, it was...
Obviously, it was August.
It was August, but yesterday was December. 66 degrees in Prospect Park. So it doesn't feel like I've been away that long, or maybe Al Gore's right.
Global warming, right? Except it's supposed to snow tomorrow.
Right? We'll see, but last time I was here, we talked about the Staten Island South Shore All-Stars returning from the Little League World Series. Gave them a parade in Keys to the City. Since then, I've got a chance to introduce some other guys who won a World Series. They also got a parade in Keys to the City. Big deal. A lot of fun. Great for the city. Great for the team. Great for the players. Great for sports.
So what else you been up to since last time I saw you? Anything?
No, been working.
Been working, exactly right. Well, congratulations, obviously, on the contest.
Thank you. Now the real work started on the 4th. You know, it's all about building a team. Same thing it was after the first election, the second election. It's all about coming up with new ideas.
Are you going to have much turnover in the administration?
I've said something like between a quarter and a third, and we started about 6 months ago talking to people who, you know, were just time to do something else in their lives. People who did some great jobs for the city, but time. And I kept saying to people, you know, I'm amazed when we went out and looked for people who might want to join the administration, I kept saying to these people, but, you know, I might not get reelected. And they said, I just want to come. I want to be part of this because the city really is doing innovative things. I'm a big believer that if you want to attract good people, you've got to delegate to them, give them some authority to go along with the responsibility. Nobody that's good wants to take a job where they're not going to be able to be creative.
Just show up, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not very attractive. And it's the way, you know, I was used to run my company and the way we've run city government. And I keep saying it's not me. My job is to attract the good people and set some ethical standards and find a ways to compensate them and get them some, you know, make them happy to be here. But they're the ones that are really doing the work.
Was it difficult or has it been difficult to find people that would work in the third term where they know that there's, you know, it's only one term?
Well, keep in mind that was true for the second term.
Well, that's true, too.
And so, it's people that say, you know, 4 years you can really make a difference and you can use what we've done for the last 8 years and in all fairness what was done by mayors before me as building blocks and take it to the next level, no matter how, you know, schools are a lot better. We have a long ways to go. Crime, we're going to set a record this year for the record low crime, but any crime is too much crime. And so, you know, there's chances for new opportunities to do things differently and come up with different ideas. And so, you know, I think starting 6 months ago, maybe we started changing. And, you know, if there's 40 commissioners, 25% is 10, 15%, you know, we will get a third, we'll get some number like that.
I haven't had the chance to talk with you since the election. Tell me about how you assess the mood of America, not just New Yorkers, but you look what happened in Nassau County, Westchester, other places across the country.
Well, people are worried, I think, is the best way is to describe it. They sense that not everything's going right. I mean, obviously, if you've lost your job, lost your home, you know things aren't going right for you.
Yeah, life
but
is tough.
People know that the country has great challenges. You know, President Obama got elected promising change, and the low turnout is worrisome. Some people would say that's people, when they're disgusted, don't turn out. I don't know whether that's true.
Nassau County, low Democratic turnout.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a wake-up call to all elected officials. We have a responsibility to find new ways to do things and to address those issues that in boom times, they drag along and they don't bother you as much. But in when the economy slows down, that's when you really take a look at your tax bill and you say it's too high. That's when you really take a look and see whether or not all the services we're providing are being provided efficiently and things we should do. So the public's focus has changed. I think most people don't know what a credit derivative swap is, but they know there's something wrong in the economy, and because of all the job losses and foreclosures, and they want it fixed. And, you know, from a practical point of view, the ways the public expresses their desires is every November. And I think not as many are doing that as should do that. But, you know, forecasters, all the political pundits say next year, which is, you know, only 11 months from now, almost to the day, there is going to be a great challenge for incumbents to explain why the problems haven't gotten fixed during their watches. Now, some of them can say, look, you know, I did my best. I stood up. I fought the great fight. Yeah, I can't do it all by myself. And that's true.
And the people that you've talked with, the politicals that are in the business now, looking ahead like you were just describing, do you sense that there is a different mindset? Do they have a different mindset on how they're going to be looking at the decisions and the way they think about what they do?
I don't know.
Am I being a little too esoteric?
Some yes, some no would be the obvious answer. It's very different whether you're in the executive branch or the legislative branch. It's very different, or in the judicial branch, because there are a lot of judges around the country that are elected. It varies from state to state. There are some states where the economy is doing much better than in others. I actually am reasonably optimistic on New York City. A lot of the economic indicators are positive. We are nowhere as near, nor will we be for a long time, back to the boom days at the top. But our unemployment is roughly, we've lost about 125,000 jobs since the high. And the estimates now are that that'll get up to about 175,000. A terrible thing for every one of those 175,000 people. But it is 100,000 less than what the pessimists were predicting. Hotel occupancy is better than last year. Fundamentally, with 3,000 more rooms this year than we had last year because of new hotels, and something like 85% occupancy rate. The rest of the country, I think the average is about 60. And a lot of big cities are way below that. Restaurateurs will tell you business is better. Maybe not all 20,000 restaurants we have in this city, but most in all five boroughs. Broadway ticket sales are at record levels. Our population keeps growing. So, you know, there is reason to be optimistic, but there's plenty of reasons to not rest on your laurels. We've got to find jobs for those 125, growing 175,000 people. Training and helping small businesses which can absorb those people. We've got to find ways that people can avoid losing their homes. That destabilizes the whole community as well as a disaster for the people that actually lose them. And you can do that with finding ways to have angel funds that will help with mortgage payments and giving advice and that sort of thing, teaching people their rights. But we've got to, the same old things are the jobs in front of us. Keep improving the schools, keep bringing crime down, keep increasing life expectancy in this city, making it a city where immigrants want to come and everybody can share in the great American dream and have hope for the future.
The president had a summit yesterday on jobs. I don't know if he invited you or not, but do you have any suggestions on how he can make more jobs in the national scene?
Yeah, I think that I wasn't invited as far as I know. But in the end, in New York City, for example, half of all the people that work in the private sector work in small companies. And if we want to create jobs in the short term, you're not going to get big companies to relocate here easily. It isn't that we're not attractive. They just don't change locations very often. But small companies, we want them to come here and open and thrive. That means more immigrants from around the world who have that entrepreneurial spirit and come here to create jobs rather than take away American jobs. It's that people don't, some people don't get it. It's is a job creation thing, immigration. It is finding ways to reduce the taxes on small businesses, finding ways to make it easier to get permits and inspections and some things we're starting to work on already. Finding ways to make it more friendly and, you know, got to make sure that we don't tax people so much that they leave and take their companies and the jobs that are associated with it away. And every state is in competition for those jobs. And so, you know, in Florida, no inheritance tax, income tax. You know, personally, I would rather live in New York. I think there's an enormous number of reasons to live here. No, not everybody's going to look at that that way, and so constantly finding ways to make the burden of paying for the services that we all agree we want, making that burden lower by better efficiencies is something we've got to focus on.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take care of our economy here at WOR for just a moment. Mayor Michael Bloomberg with us, and of course at 800-321-0710. Before we finish up, your opportunity to ask the mayor some questions yourself. Again, 800-321-0710. And 19 minutes now after 8 o'clock.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. All right, as you said before, things pretty much haven't changed, even though the last time we talked was in August. A lot of things have taken place, but we're still dealing with a state that's got money problems, New York that's got money problems. I was reading about the city's deficit the other day growing. You got to be concerned anytime something like
The city's deficit is less than what we had predicted last June. We were talking about a $5 billion deficit, and I think it's fair to say we probably have to face a $4 billion deficit. So anybody that thinks, oh, good times are back, $4 billion is a scary number. But it is better because the economy, as I said before, isn't as bad as the pessimists had predicted. And the city has always... or at least in the last 8 years, we've been very conservative in our estimates for the future because I'd rather be surprised when things are better than surprised if things turn out to be worse. And the state, I think one of the problems they had is they had an aggressive, optimistic forecast of revenues. We had a pessimistic forecast of revenues. So they have a bigger deficit than they'd counted on. We have a smaller deficit than we counted on. We still have a program to eliminate the gap. This will be our eighth, asking basically all agencies to cut 4% this year, 8% next year. There's 6 months left to go in this fiscal year, January through June.
So that would be a double 12% cut over the last 2 years?
Well, I wish the numbers were that simple. You do it, the cut, the way you measure it is against the projection. So if there were built-in escalators next year, for example, a labor settlement that next year call for higher, it's against that higher number, so you can't just add the two together. But it is no question about it, after all of these cuts, there's very little easy, low-hanging fruit where you can say, oh, we can do without that and nobody will have a big problem. It is education and the four uniform services, police, fire, sanitation, correction, account for something like 80% of the city's tax base funds. It is every one of these agencies is almost all 80% probably salaries and benefits. I've said we can't afford to raise taxes because we will drive the people out of the city who have the jobs we need. And we've just can't do that anymore. On the other hand, we cannot go back to the days when we walked away from making infrastructure investments and losing control of the streets and letting our schools fall apart. You say, well, if you can't reduce your expenses on one side and you can't or stop the services and you can't increase the taxes on the other side, you can look and see and make sure things are fair and everybody pays their share. For example, our new finance commissioner hired some more auditors to go after. You pay your taxes, I pay mine, everybody should pay theirs, and auditors bring in money.
Water bills, you know.
Well, whatever. I mean, people, whatever it is, if everybody paid paid, it would be less of a burden on the most people who do pay. And finding ways to do more with less, and maybe some programs you can slow down a little bit. But we will have to do more with less and set priorities.
Fire department has already been cut in many of the firehouses, right?
Well, every city agency over the last 8 years has had to come with cuts, although there are other things in each agency that have gone up. So today we do spend a lot more than we spent 8 years ago. But if we hadn't had these, if we hadn't put money away, remember a few years ago, we said that right here on this show, I'm sure, that this can't go on forever, this boom that we were having. And so we started prepaying interest and putting money away to fund future liabilities for retired workers' health benefits and going through every single program and seeing what we need and what we don't. And I've challenged every one of our commissioners with a real number to go ahead, and they've got to do it again. And
as you say, it's going to have to go through to jobs, to actual jobs here.
Well, yeah, but you could, for example, you don't.
Attrition,
that doesn't,
or other things?
Attrition is a lot less painful than layoffs, and where there are always new requirements, so people doing more. Some people say, oh, I should get paid more. Well, you know, the real world is that we all are going to have to do more and make ourselves more efficient, and that's the way we're going to get through
this. My guess is there are fewer people retiring, though, because, again, the
that
demands...
is the other problem that are, you know, when an agency has projected to meet their reduction goals, they say, well, we'll downsize by attrition. What do you do if people don't retire? And that's exactly what has happened. City employment is great for a lot of people. They like working here, and the alternative of leaving and going to the private sector is less attractive when the economic downturn is there. And also, we've raised salaries to get the best people, and so people have less of an incentive to leave.
All right, why don't we take a break right here for our half-hour news, Mr. Mayor, and when we come back, we'll get into some of the things, the same-sex marriage vote that went down. I'd like to get your opinion on that and some other things as well. In fact, a full list here on the cheat sheet in front of me. 8:30 in the morning, if you've got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. Get in line, talk to Figs now. This is Joe Bartlett. Joe.
All right. 321-0710. John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Not sure why we had music from the royal family without words for the royal family, but we'll make up that at another time. John Gambling with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 24 to 4, 9 o'clock. If you got your questions, you better get in line. I think there's only one more that Figs has open, 800-321-0710. Yes, sir.
You know, we were talking about before in a lighthearted way of what happened while I was away. And you did a good job in running the show without me.
I struggled on Fridays this last
hour. Well, you know, you've got a lineage of being able to do it. Anyways, on a more serious note, I just wanted to say a few words about Army Specialist Kevin O'Hill. He was from East New York at 23 years old, killed on patrol in a remote section of Afghanistan back on October 4th. And this is a guy who was assigned to the 4th Engineer Battalion, the 576th Mobility Augmentation Company, and he serves as a prison guard. And he told his family he joined the Army with the goal one day to join the Secret Service, and he worked for the TSA at Kennedy Airport through his 4 years at Monroe College. You know, New York kid, great American dream. Year in the Army, he won the Army Commendation Medal and a National Defense Service Medal. It's interesting. He comes from, like an awful lot of these young people, from a tradition of service. He was born at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, where his father, Olson Hill, was a paratrooper in the first Gulf War. His grandfather, Osler Hill Sr., served in the military as well. So do his mother, Mahalia, and his father and grandfather, Olson Jr. and Sr. And he had two daughters, Shanera and Chantel, and all the rest of the family and everyone who loved him. All I can say is that we're here today because of the bravery and sacrifice of Kevin. And this is a city of 8.4 million people and a country of 304 million, and we really are in their debt.
All right.
I think it was his sisters, not kids, because he's 23 years old.
Okay. Yeah. But it comes from a family of military folks and obviously inspired by them, and we should be by him and his sacrifice.
Well, you talked earlier about you know, the problems this country has. Defending this country is a very big deal. We still have the need to have young people go around the world.
All right. Afghanistan, the president made, obviously, his decision this week on how he sees the go forward. That's fine, and, you know, there's no point in us going over that. But how about the decision to bring Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the rest of his henchmen here to New York City?
You know, number one, there's a tradition of having the trials where the crimes take place. There's a lot of reasons for that. And those that think that the non-military courts can't get the job done, the Southern District has a record of prosecuting terrorists bar none. This is a fantastic group. They have an enviable record, and I'm sure they're going to justice will be accomplished. But it's up to the decision. The decision's up to the federal government. And
are you worried about security?
You know, if the trial was taking place, let's say in Guantanamo Bay, we would raise security in the city. No, in the context of we deal with this every day. That's what our police department does. The city is as safe as we can possibly make it, or I guess we can always make it safer, but we're always working on that. Downtown, because of our the fact that the downtown was a target before, has security measures, a lot of which can't talk about for obvious reasons, but I feel very confident that the NYPD can do it. In the end, it's the decision of Holder, the Attorney General, and the President. And Holder called me and said this is what they wanted to do. And I said, look, we will, the NYPD will provide everything that you need. And Kelly and I
have you been assured that you're going to get paid back for it? I know that the Senator Schumer is.
I think we the Attorney General told Schumer that he thinks NYC should be reimbursed for the trial expenses. And, you know, the last time we were together, I talked about the money the UN owes us for the U.S. owes us for UN security.
You haven't gotten paid for that.
Yeah, but I think so. But keep in mind, most of the security costs we would have anyways. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean we don't want federal monies, and I'm not trying to. I want to make sure we still get those. And there is extra cost, but will it change your life or mine in terms of how we walk around the city and how comfortable we feel? No.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time, but I got a lot of questions. I know that you have been a supporter of same-sex marriages. You know the vote of the other day. Is this dead? Is it done?
Or I don't know if it's done. I just don't. I've never thought this is the government's business. I just plain and simple. Whether you're in favor or against, you have a right to your views, and my views aren't important. But for all of us, having the government stay out of some of these kinds of issues is best for all of us.
Okay. What is going on between the city and Robert Morgenthau, the DA, Manhattan DA?
Well, number one, I think you got to step back. Bob Morgenthau has had a he's dedicated his life to public service, and he has done a very effective job as Attorney General. And I have an enormous amount of respect for him. But when you see something wrong, no matter who's doing it, you got to take action to address it. And I think that's what Bob Morgenthau would do as well. We're not doing anything that he wouldn't do. Here's the problem. We discovered our new finance commissioner in doing a bunch of sweeps to see, making sure that all of the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, found that the DA's office has been keeping some hidden bank accounts. We found about 62 of them with, I think, about $83 million in them. It could be more. We just don't know because the DA hasn't opened his books. And these accounts were never reported to the city or the controller, even though the law is very clear. If you use the city taxpayer ID, you have to get permission from the finance department. You have to make sure the Office of Management, OMB, gets information about what the expenditures are. The controller's office has to register, and that was just not done here. So we really don't know how much money is being spent, where it came from, how much it is, and that's a real public. This is the public's money, and you just can't have two sets of books. So I had my staff go to see Bob and say, you know, what's going on here? What are all these accounts? He said to us then that he needed time to pull together the information, and that was fine with us. But then over a period of time, after numerous occasions, we just couldn't get answers. And this is the taxpayers' money, so we had no choice but to ask the banks. You know, we've never suggested there's any misuse of public funds, but the point is we don't know how the money's being spent or how much is out there.
$80 million is a lot of money.
Well, it's especially problematic because, remember, these are public monies. The public has a right to know about them. Every agency, including the district attorney, has a responsibility and a legal obligation to make sure their finances are transparent. And the DA comes to us every year for his budget. How are we supposed to know what their budget needs are when they're sitting on tens of millions of dollars? And the monies that we give to the DA are monies we could use for other things if they're not needed. But, you know, refusing to identify where the money came from, all we're saying is the public does have a right to know. Now, I will say this, that I was encouraged. The DA said yesterday, I think it was, that he would allow the controller to do a full audit of these accounts. Remember, the controller didn't know anything about these accounts either. And we assume that the DA's office will provide the controller with full cooperation and do a thorough audit as quickly as possible. And that audit goes to the public. This is the public's monies. And nobody, no agency has a right to hide what they do. Nobody's suggesting there was any wrong thing intended with the monies. But the bottom line is every agency, it's clear, the law requires this to be in the public domain, and it should be in the public domain. It's the public monies.
Is this a cookie jar? Any indication that this was a cookie jar?
No. No, Bob Morgenthau is as honest a person, as far as I know, as you can find. And but having said all that, it's still the public's right to know. And our responsibility is to make sure the law is enforced. And we have a new commissioner of our Department of Finance, and he's going through every single part of that agency and making sure that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. And, it sort of got came to a fore the other day when the state passed a law that said that taking some of our money, that's a whole separate issue. The real issue that we've been talking about is, plain and simple, the disclosure. Public's money, public has a right to know.
What is your position, and it's been brought to, again to the front of page of the newspapers about eminent domain. It was just last week that the courts found in favor of the development of the arena in Brooklyn. Now Columbia has a question uptown.
Well, number one, this is Atlantic Yards was a city using eminent domain.
Correct.
This is the state, in all fairness, using. So we aren't a party to the litigation. The council approved the project back in 07. And make no mistake about it, the Manhattanville plan really is critical to Columbia's future as one of the leading academic institutions. And it's the city's standing as a world-class center for higher education. They need the state-of-the-art academic campuses that attract jobs to the area and people who will be our future, students, construction jobs, permanent jobs, public space. All of this is what that land is supposed to be used for. And there's a very small handful of half a dozen, I think it was less than that, actually.
I think there are two.
I heard, I don't know what the decision, I haven't read the decision. It was 3-2. It may be on a legal technicality. I don't know that they'll appeal. I assume they will.
Yeah, I heard they are going to appeal, but, so I'm assuming that the same process for the Atlantic Yards could apply here.
Yeah, I don't know whether the law is different, whether the city doing it, mm-hmm. the state doing it, but... make no mistake, Columbia is one of those gems in our crown, and we have to find a ways that they can grow. No university can survive in this day and age, or the city that they serve, without growing and adding. And Columbia is, one of the great universities in the world.
Back to budgeting and how tight things are. You are talking with the teachers union, the UFT, about new contracts and the way we on the go forward here. And Michael Mulgrew. Michael Mulgrew said that this 10-year seniority issue is one that he claims he's going to fight you tooth and nail about.
Well, number one, the contract is. We're not going to negotiate a contract, neither he nor I, in public. You don't get things done that way. There will be plenty of time to discuss the issues. It'll be done civilly. I've gotten to know the new head of the UFT, Michael Mulgrew. He replaced Randy Weingarten. But let me just point out that over the last 8 years, the city has gotten an awful lot to help the schools improve from the teachers and their union. And the teachers and their union have gotten an awful lot from the city in terms of dramatically higher pay. That was done when you and I would, and the papers would have these big knockdown, drag-out battles. The real world is that things are done civilly and quietly, and all of the theatrics notwithstanding. We have a record with the UFT of improving the quality of the teachers, their working conditions. So crime is in the schools way down. Ability to change the world. Last time we opened, we had jobs open for teachers. We had something like 50,000 and 60,000 teachers from around the country. Teachers want to be part of this. We've raised their salaries 43%, more than virtually any other part of city government. And it was done without doing it in the, yelling and screaming.
I get the message.
And I think that that's, in the end, that's, there are things that, one of the things that concerns me very much is qualifying for the challenges that the Secretary of Education,
Arne
Duncan, and the President.
The race for...
if we were to walk away from that money because we had rules that do not permit us to win in that competition.
Well, the state has to change it. The cap on charter schools is one of them.
Cap on charter schools is one thing. The number of using data to the student
evaluate.
Performance data to evaluate teachers for tenure. Being able to have the best and the brightest. I mean, there isn't any part of our world where it isn't somewhat competitive, and education is not any different. You've got to do a good job, or your employer is not going to keep you. And the same is for everybody. The taxpayer out there understands that tough times you got to do more, and you can't get as much as you'd like. And in good times, you want to share, and we've done the sharing. And these are the tough times.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've got some people that would like to ask you some questions. We will get to them in just a moment. Let me see. Figs must be on the warpath here. There are two open lines here. Very unusual. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Come right back to your questions. This portion of the program brought to you by Winthrop University Hospital out in Long Island. It's care without compromise.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike, News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, Mayor Mike, we've got folks on the phone here. Let's get right to them. We're going to start with Paul in Brooklyn. Paul, your question for the mayor.
Hello. Good morning, John. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
My question is about the water board. To make increases whenever they feel like doing it, and have done so at least three times. I was wondering if there's any way that you could get control over this water board so at least we can get some...
Whoops. I don't know where he went. I don't know what happened.
Don't know either. Well, let me just talk about the waterway. 80% of all of the expenses that Department of Environmental Protection, which is where the water rates money goes, are required. 80% of their expenses are required by either federal law, state law, city law, or court decisions. There isn't a lot of
wiggle room there.
There's not a lot of wiggle room. So, when a cost of construction goes up, which it has been for a number of years, or last year or so it's gone down, there's just, you have no choice. Number two, we also have to complete the third water tunnel, and we're under court order for the filtration plan up in Van Cortlandt Park, and people want more sewers and storm sewers in low-lying areas in Staten Island and Brooklyn and Queens and all the way up even parts of the Bronx. So it's unfortunate, but we also now have a new commissioner, which I appointed the other day, of the Department of Environmental Protection, Kaz Holloway, who I think will do a great job. But unfortunately, if you take a look at it, there's not a lot of ways to reduce the expenses, and the water board just has to set the rates by law to pay the expenses.
All right, let's go to Danny in Rockaway. Danny, real fast, right to the question, please.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I'm the president of the 100 Precinct Council in Rockaway, Queens, and I'd just like to know how the police coverage is going to take place in Manhattan with the terrorist trial, because you know, we're short of policemen now. We know we're not getting any money. It's very tight.
Okay, Danny, because we're running out of time. Number one, I wouldn't worry about it. We're always moving people around depending on, you know, if you have a big event, we move people from one place to another. We're not going to leave any borough uncovered. Your area will be fine. We have an enormous police presence downtown already, and while I think a lot of the enhanced security is changing tactics as much as adding people. Now, the police commissioner always wants to have more cops, and I don't blame him, but, you know, the real world is we only have so much money, and we can't afford to put a cop on every corner and any more than we can put a firehouse in every block. But I would not worry about it. We have a police department that can provide that security without leaving any other part of the city uncovered. And my recollection is that during the Republican convention, when we had to provide an enormous amount of extra security over on the west side near Madison Square Garden, crime in the rest of the city went down.
All right, Danny, thanks for the good telephone call.
Incidentally, it was the same thing. Fires went down during after 9/11 and the rest of the city, even though we had an enormous amount of resources sent tragically to the World Trade Center after 9/11, but the rest of the city stayed covered.
All right, let's go to Eileen. Your question, Eileen, write to it, please.
Okay, yes. Mayor, I just want to know, I know salaries have stayed competitive, but what has happened in terms of the pensions and the benefits?
Pensions and benefits. We have a new agreement, which was I'm pleased to see ratified by the state legislature the other day. It changes a few small things, which over the next 10 years will save the city some money. But I think it's fair to say if you take a look at our pension system for teachers compared to any place else, they'll do very well. And 43% raise in salaries as well. So I'm glad
you've been calling for that tier five.
Different. But this is, in all fairness, we negotiated once again something we did privately, quietly with the union, and it helps the city.
All right. Well, what do you say we make a little noise here next week?
Looking forward to it.
All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, great to have you back here on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. It's Friday. That's it, everybody. We'll be back with you on Monday. Busy week next week. Hope you'll be part of it.
You've just heard John Gambling. New York's best news talk continues next.